In Washington, the push by Democrats to expand voting rights has stalled. So has a major expansion of the social safety net. But President Biden did find one thing to cheer about. Today marks the 60th day since he signed his infrastructure bill into law. He announced that states would receive nearly $27 billion and tribes $825 million over the next 5 years to repair existing bridges and to build new ones.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable is here to put that news and the rest of the political week in perspective. It was a big one. Margaret Talov, Managing Editor for Politics at Axios, is here. Hi, Margaret.
Hey, great to be with you.
Good to have you. And Maya King, National Political Reporter for Politico. Maya, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So this was quite a week for the president, wasn't it? Here he is yesterday after going to Capitol Hill and failing to get every Senate Democrat to support changing the filibuster rules to pass voting rights legislation.
I hope we can get this done. The honest to God answer is I don't know whether we can get this done.
And here he is talking about the raging pandemic.
I know we're all frustrated as we enter this new year. Omicron variant is causing millions of cases and record hospitalizations.
And yesterday, the Supreme Court struck down his vaccine mandate for businesses, and we again saw the highest inflation number since 1982. Maya, I don't mean to pile on there, but are these warning lights flashing for the White House?
Well, it's you have to figure out even where to begin when you think about how to solve these crises. And it's not just a warning in Washington for this administration and how they've handled these, but also on the ground now as Democrats mount their campaigns heading into the midterms. Reports today saying that Democrats are largely planning to focus on their wins from 2021 just to have things to bring to voters to get them back in office. That's a pretty bleak state of affairs when you think about it, considering these elections are 11 months away. It's a process now of just thinking about what's happening in Washington with Democrats governing, but also what they're able to bring, and if there is any room at all to make major progress between now and really the middle of the summer at the heat of these campaigns, to not only get people to support them, but to get people to vote and to participate.
Look, Margaret, this has got to be the hardest job in the world. Every administration has its challenges. Do you think that there's anything abnormally difficult about what the president is going through right now?
Well, Peter, of course. I mean, the biggest difficulty, and this would be the case whoever the president was, is COVID. It's a virus. It is an actual fact. It's not something that can be spun. It's larger than all of us, and it's mutating. And its spread is exacerbated by the fact that there is a locked-in block of Americans, a disproportionate number of whom are also Biden opponents, who do not trust the vaccine or don't believe it's necessary, won't take it. And that is kind of exacerbated the entrenchment of the virus. And so that overlays everything here that has happened in terms of health, in terms of economy, in terms of voter state of mind, whether they are Republican voters or Democratic voters or somewhere in between. But there are also the kind of systemic political problems that Biden faces, which is it's a 50-50 Senate with a couple of key senators on the Democratic side of 50 who are never going to help the Democrats do what they want to do. Yeah. So that's baked in. And then the third category is really what Biden and his team and his party are bringing to the table, which is has been some real failures both in messaging proactively and in expectation setting. And we saw that from everywhere, from the exit from Afghanistan to vaccinations and preparing people for inflation and supply chain errors. So there's very little that Biden can do to control the first two. The third is the only thing that's marginally in his control. Can he and his team get better at helping Americans to understand the context of these problems, what he's doing, and to feel good about those things?
Let's bring up the other big news this week. The president spent more than an hour at the White House last night trying to convince West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin and Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema to back rule changes that would allow voting rights legislation to pass with a simple majority. Here's Sinema. She made her position clear. Here she is on the Senate floor.
And while I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country.
Maya, there's supposed to be on Tuesday a vote for this. It seems clear what might happen, but what do you think might happen?
Well, I would agree with the folks who are essentially throwing cold water on this yet again, saying that that this won't happen because, again, he doesn't have the votes to pass this legislation outright. He doesn't have the votes. President Biden doesn't have the votes to change the rules to pass this. So it's it casts a shadow over what will take place on Tuesday and also on the president's visit to Georgia thus just this week, endorsing
well,
Yes,
let me pose the question another way, though. How significant is it that the Senate wants to move forward when they know they won't have the votes?
It's yet another blow, I would say, to the party's prospects when it comes to being able to pass voting rights that they've put forth as marquee legislation, and kind of underlines the growing number and volume of complaints from activists, organizers, and advocates who have been saying you have to prioritize this legislation. And if you don't, not only will the voters that you need be unable to vote, but there's also this lack of enthusiasm that could take place here too. Everybody's watching what's taking place in Washington now as it relates to voting rights. This has been a big issue from the beginning when we saw these state legislatures begin to pass more restrictive voting measures on the ground. And so it's the issue isn't going anywhere, and neither, unfortunately, is this legislation as it relates to its ability to pass. And I think that this just has kind of a ripple effect, not only on the ways that lawmakers are thinking about this, but again, how advocates and folks on the ground are going to be able to respond and get their voters out in these next few months.
Margaret, building on what Maya is saying, so is this act of moving forward just as important at this point? I mean, Biden, as Maya said, risks losing significant support. Many communities see not passing voting rights legislation as a major threat to our democracy.
Yeah, it's normally not a tactic for leadership in either chamber to take up something they know is going to fail. I think in this case, they feel there's no alternative but to do that, to put a final squeeze on people, to let members who want to vote for this go on the board as doing it, to set a marker historically, and then to move on. What are they going to move on to? That's a good question. I have seen some reports that there'll be a return by both President Biden and to Democrats in Congress to some of the police reform or George Floyd related efforts. That's obviously messaging at the very least to a community that feels really frustrated with what's happened on voting rights. And then in blue states, states with Democratic governors or Democratic controlled legislatures, all of those states, you're seeing efforts to move ahead to broaden voting rights access. It's a recognition that it's not going to happen at the federal level this year. Make it happen at the state level. The problem is a majority of states in the country are, for them, their problem is are red states, are not blue states. And so you're just seeing this further bifurcation of America. There are red states and blue states having fundamentally different laws on voting access, on access to abortions for women, on a lot of these kind of both social and also civil society kind of type of mandates and framework for what it is to live in those states. And then we're going to see Donald Trump, of course, use this moment to make his reemergence, his debut in Arizona. And that says a whole lot about the messages that he's trying to send at this moment in time.
Right. And speaking of red states, I want to get to this tape of Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on Wednesday. He was blasting the president for his speech in Atlanta on voting rights. McConnell said that Biden had strayed from his own promise to bring civility back to Washington.
He invoked the literal civil war and said we're on the doorstep of autocracy, talked about domestic enemies, rhetoric unbecoming of a president of the United States.
Maya, Republicans, by no means are they innocent of striking up divisions in this country, but what did you make of the point that McConnell was making there?
Well, I think that Leader McConnell essentially was speaking to a number of the grievances that those in his party have around the ways that Democrats have tried to characterize their lack of support for voting rights legislation, and also the ways that they've tried to sort of recharacterize the events of January 6th. what we're seeing now, on top of all of the messaging that we've talked about coming from the White House and how those things have to change, there's almost a messaging war between both parties in Washington around just what has taken place in this country in the last year, not only as it relates to January 6th, but again, as it relates to voting rights, who gets to vote, and what is considered a quote-unquote legitimate vote in this country. And I think that what you're hearing from Leader McConnell, too, is an effort to, I think, sow the seeds of messaging on that that say, you know, we're not going to be characterized as the anti-democratic party, even though many signs kind of point to that lean towards autocracy in many ways as it relates to these issues.
Yeah. Maya King is national political reporter for Politico, and Margaret Talev is managing editor for Politics at Axios. I want to thank you both for taking some time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Tanya.